You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
While there's nothing in the act that was passed yesterday that actually will directly reduce emissions, you know, we still have to take the action. It sets in place some really useful machinery, and you know, that's why we worked very hard, you know, to try to actually secure the legislation. We're really pleased to see it passed with no votes being cast against.
Talking about that unanimity, what does that say to you, the fact that this passed unanimously? Oh, I believe, was it 119-1, or was there no votes against?
Well, it's actually hard to know. The no votes were actually cast against in the House. So David Seymour had spoken vigorously against it in the committee stage. He didn't actually cast a vote against. He wasn't in the House. And so whether by accident or design, a vote against was not recorded for him. Now, he might seek to correct that later if that was not actually what he intended. But for the moment, we're taking unanimous, so that's great. And actually, the cross-party support, particularly the support from National, I think is very important. And I think that the community who worked hard organising for this bill, and in particular young people, and I want to single out Gen Zero for their role especially, this was their inspiration and they put in all of the hard yards to make this work, and we've just come in behind to support them. But by creating such strong public awareness, and you know, School Strikes for Climate, you know, they deserve a lot of credit for this also. Creating that strong public pressure and demand for political action has meant that even political parties that I guess we might have suspected would oppose and vote against, that's no longer politically viable. You know, they know that the public demands that they take action, and this is the least of it. And you know, it's good on National. You know, it's good to see them actually coming to the party on this. And they said in their speeches that they've got some differences of view about detail, and you know, we know pretty clearly what those are, and they will seek to make some changes to the law later on if they're in a position to do so. Actually, I kind of suspect that in pretty short order, the seriousness of this crisis that we're facing will mean that even those who are demanding, you know, weaker methane targets, for example, will not be doing so in just a very short time. You know, that everyone will very soon come to know that the bill that's passed yesterday, the new act, sets out just the very minimum that we need to do, and we're going to need to do a lot more than that.
And so obviously you were in Parliament listening to all these debates happening yesterday. What were kind of the main points of contention that people weren't in agreement about?
Really, the key thing that people were uncomfortable with, and National indicated that they would look to change, were the methane targets. And their point is that farmers are already doing what they can. It will be difficult to maintain the rate of methane reduction that's currently being undertaken, and they believe, and Simon Bridges has previously set this out, that we should effectively wait for new technology to enable us to make further reductions in methane. The counter to that is that actually, you know, that's a formula for kind of business as usual, and that's not where we need to be. If we are to achieve limitation on global warming to the kind of level that the Act now aspires to, and that we've signed up in Paris to try and achieve, of 1.5 degrees, well, there's implications. We then have to do the things that are required to meet that target. It's not just a feel-good gesture. And that means, you know, agricultural emissions are around 50% of New Zealand's greenhouse gas emissions. We can't sort of just put that off to one side and say, well, we're going to wait for some new technology before we do something about that. We have to tackle it. And actually, as James Shaw is inclined to say, constraint drives innovation, or necessity is the mother of invention, if you prefer. So actually, putting some hard limits in place is the thing that will cause farmers and researchers and scientists to actually come up with the ideas that will make this work. And actually, some farmers have already made really substantial reductions in their methane. And one of the things we know, for example, is that in many cases, perhaps most cases, for dairy farmers, actually reducing the size of their herd can be done without reducing profitability. But both the freshwater pollution from nitrates and climate pollution from methane are directly proportional to herd size. So if you can decrease herd size, well, you can immediately have an impact on methane and nitrates. So, you know, there are some pretty easy wins that are available for most. We should take those easy wins and recognise that we're going to need to work hard to actually achieve the targets in the future. But we need to, you know, if we could actually do something that would keep warming to below 1.5 degrees, we should be doing that. You know, it's incumbent on everyone to do everything that they can, and that has to include farmers.
And so talking about those restrictions and sort of the ability of the Act to actually hold people to account, were there some concerns expressed yesterday about the fact that the bill doesn't have any legal consequences?
You know, these are issues that we traversed in our submissions on the bill. You know, so we talked about the methane targets needing actually to be stronger. We talked about the fact that as a developed country, there is an ethical duty for New Zealand to do more than our kind of proportional share of 1.5 degrees, so that developing countries actually have got a little bit of freeboard to be able to sort of manage the welfare and health of their populations. And then the third key area that we focused on was the ability of the Act, and in particular the Commission, to require ministers to do things, to actually set binding recommendations, because the Act doesn't provide for that to happen. Obviously, if they could be binding, as all of us on the sort of climate justice side of things have wanted, then that would give the Act more direct teeth and the Commission the ability to actually directly make change happen. The counter to it is that actually Parliament is sovereign. So if you've got this independent body that's making recommendations, Parliament needs to be able to make its own decisions. And even if you had binding recommendations, well, Parliament could just change the law. So I guess that's true. I would have preferred to actually see a mechanism with more teeth. But one of the things that I like about the mechanism of the Climate Commission is that it can effectively ratchet up. And the purpose of limiting warming to 1.5 degrees, you know, that's now set in law. So we all have to be working towards that target. And so if the Commission finds that the measures that we have in place, the fact that its recommendations are not binding on ministers and government, and that is a problem in reaching 1.5 degrees, so the Commission then can ratchet up those mechanisms. So there is in place a way that the rules can become tougher if they need to be.
I wondered, this might be completely left field, but just as you were talking about that, I was kind of thinking, it is true that Parliament is supreme and Parliament of the day is supreme. I don't think we'd ever see it happen, but without any kind of entrenchment in this bill, I mean, you could hypothetically have a Parliament in the future just completely overturning it. Obviously, there'd be extreme political opposition to that, which would probably be what would stop that from happening. But has that discussion been taking place at all? Some kind of safeguard to...
Look, I don't think it has, and I think the reason for that is that really, everyone can now see. So an enormous amount has happened in the last year or two. The political landscape around climate change has fundamentally changed. So when I was in Parliament, you know, we were working for years and years to actually try and get government of the day to take climate change seriously, completely without success. And we had literally decades, in fact, of governments of both stripes, actually, not sort of successive governments, giving a really mixed message to New Zealanders. On the one hand, saying climate change is really important, and on the other hand, not actually, well, doing anything about it. You know, so of course, you know, most people will have got this really weird signal that, well, is this important or not? Well, I guess if it was really important, they would be doing more about it. And so you had this kind of constant undermining of the necessity of making change in our behaviours. And, you know, for people like me, I mean, I've been aware of climate change since the 1972, actually, is when I was first reading about it. one of my degrees is in geophysics, you know, the physics of, you know, of atmosphere and the ocean. So it's been enormously exasperating, because if we had been taking more serious action earlier, we would not be needing to make the same drastic changes that we need to make now. Now, the counterfactual to that is, well, human beings are kind of a brink species. We tend to react at the last moment rather than managing change in a gradual way, which would actually have been in our better interests. So here we are now. We've done almost nothing until now. We now have to make drastic changes, you know, very big changes that will have dramatic effects on people's lives, and we need to make them urgently. But we have arrived at a place where the bulk of the New Zealand population is now really concerned about climate change. Very few people now say, oh, it isn't really happening or it isn't really serious. And most people are now looking to government of whatever stripe to actually represent them in this and represent their demands for the necessary action. So I think what's going to happen, I mean, we are starting to see climate change effects now, and these are just the beginning, you know, the very first ripples of effects, you know, these more dramatic weather events, some sea level rise, the impacts on the Pacific. These are just the first stages. The impacts we're going to see over, I mean, if you'd asked climate scientists, you know, 10 years ago, what is the time frame for seeing these bigger climate change effects, they'd have said over the coming century, you're going to see them. Now, actually, climate scientists are all revising that view, because the effects are happening faster than were anticipated, faster than the models predicted, sort of at the worst end of the models, in fact. So over the next 10 years, we're going to be seeing more and more climate change effects. And what that will do is actually only harden the public's demand for dramatic action by politicians. And so I don't think that the act that's passed yesterday is going to be at risk of being overturned. And I don't think that should National be in a position to change the law, that the public will allow them to do that. So I think what we're going to see actually is probably a tightening up of the law and strengthening of the powers of the Commission.
Just before we conclude, I just wanted to put one of the dissident views to you, coming from David Seymour and the ACT Party, and he was criticising the ACT, saying it's the most expensive piece of legislation that we've ever passed, and that it will reduce national income by 6%. I wanted to know what your opinion on that was.
Well, leaving aside the detail, I mean, the thing that David, I guess, for his political reasons, conveniently overlooks is the counterfactual. What price should we put on a livable planet? The fact is that if we are to have a planet that is safe for people and for nature, we need to be taking dramatic action which has been slowed, in fact, over the years by the likes of the ACT Party and its fellow travellers. You know, for years and years, you know, ACT actually was the climate change denial party in Parliament. And as a result, it's taken until now before we've done really anything significant. And as a result of that, the cost of making the change that's required is so much greater than it would have been if we had moved in a more timely way. So yes, it's going to be expensive to change. It would be much more expensive to not change, and it would have been much less expensive had we changed much earlier, when it was Mr. Seymour and his party that were actually preventing us from doing so.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.